This is entitled The Unholy Seed, Part 36, The Invisible Enemy. If all will stand, we'll read Matthew chapter 4, verse 15. The land of Zebulun and the land of Naphtali by the way of the sea, beyond Jordan, Galilee of the Gentiles. You may be seated. This message is about the media. Maybe you'll get the connection as we go through this sermon. First, I'm going to talk about Dr. Fauci. Dr. Fauci is involved in a treasonous act. He willingly violated United States law and was working hand in hand with the communist nation of China. It is like the state of California ordering $1 billion worth of masks from a Chinese auto company that had just lost over $40 million in the last quarter. The company has never made masks at any time. It made cars. And who owns stock in that company? Warren Buffett. While being at the head of the National Institute of Health, Dr. Fauci broke United States law, which forbade any more testing on the coronavirus. To get around this hindrance, he approved $3.7 million to be shipped to a lab which had many problems in Wuhan, China, for the continuation of the study. The money was sent in 2014 when Fauci was in the Obama administration. Fauci did what? Fauci gave a $3.7 million grant to a Wuhan laboratory. The grant was made despite the fact the United States Department warned that the Wuhan laboratory was conducting dangerous experiments. That lab is suspected of leaking the virus that has spread itself all around the world. If the above is true, then American taxpayers have foot the bill for the thing that is killing us and many of our businesses. The United States intelligence community has growing confidence that the current coronavirus strain may have accidentally escaped from the Wuhan lab rather than from a wildlife market, as many, including the WHO, across the world claim. But why did the United States give money to the Chinese lab that it had prohibited? And now Dr. Fauci is leading the United States in how to handle this disease. Wasn't Dr. Fauci the one who said in an interview over 3.5 years ago that, quote, there would be a surprise outbreak, unquote, in President Trump's administration? Wasn't he the one who said that the fraudulent model he was following was saying that there could be many as 2.2 million die from the pandemic? Wasn't he the one who said that there wouldn't be any professional, collegiate, or high school sports this year? Wasn't he the one who said there's a good possibility that the disease could spike again in the fall and maybe once again after the fall outbreak? And wasn't he the one that's been on the payroll of the Clinton Foundation for years? I wonder how he can face the nation each day, knowing that it was he who gave our enemy the grant to study the coronavirus. That virus would probably have made Wuhan with backing from our own labs in North Carolina and several other places. Dr. Fauci's father was a graduate of Columbia University. Are you surprised? And was a pharmacist. Fauci is a Roman Catholic and could be a crypto Jew. He is a Jesuit. Should Dr. Fauci be found guilty of engaging in research intended to build biological weapons that target human beings? And if he is found guilty, should Dr. Fauci be criminally investigated and prosecuted for carrying out crimes against humanity? And if found guilty, should he face the death penalty? Dr. Fauci is linked to Bill and Melinda Gates, the WHO, and the CDC, the United States Laboratories, and Harvard University. Did the media tell you that the hospitals get $13,000 for every patient that has the coronavirus that enter the establishment, and another $39,000 if they're put on a ventilator, which is the wrong treatment? The president has said we are fighting an invisible enemy. The enemy that he is referring to is the coronavirus. But there is an enemy that is also invisible. Who is it? But does the media pick up this story? Now, an unknown connection between Obama and Biden. When Obama was president, Joe Biden was his vice president. They had many experiences together, but there is one that developed over time that the media doesn't tell its readers, watchers, or listeners about. One of Joe Biden's sons, Hunter, you heard of his troubles, haven't you? Has a daughter, Barack's youngest daughter, Natasha or Sasha, and Hunter's daughter go to the same school and have become best of friends. They play on the same teams and even go on vacation together. They are best friends. But does our media pick up the story? I've got a picture of them at Miami, Florida, while they're on vacation. McKinsey and Company. In a past sermon, I told you about this company. It was in reference to Pete Buttigieg, the sodomite married mayor of South Bend, Indiana. He worked for this company for about 3 years and was very secretive about what he did for them. It was founded by James O. McKenzie, graduate of the University of Chicago and Columbia University. Another surprise. From these two universities, you could guess his political views. Peter Walker. When this story broke in the news, Peter Walker appeared on Fox News. It's the only time he's appeared, the entire story has collapsed, no other coverage. But I saw this. He's a former senior partner of McKinsey & Company. Says that China moved quickly on the coronavirus. And he said the company that he worked for was a consultant to many companies, and they told them to improve their immediate profits by moving their companies to China and other low-cost companies. Now, I looked up. Here are a few of the famous people who have worked for this company. Number one is Tom Cotton, United States Senator from Arkansas. Susan E. Rice, American diplomat, former U.S. National Security Council advisor, and former U.S. ambassador to the United Nations, and involved in the Flynn investigation. Chelsea Clinton, vice chairman, Clinton Foundation, daughter of the former U.S. President Bill Clinton, and the witch and the awful person, Secretary of State Hillary Clinton. Pete Buttigieg, mayor of South Bend, Indiana, and 2020 presidential candidate who is married to, he's a sodomite. Amelia Warren Teggy, daughter of Elizabeth Warren. I talked about her in another sermon. Taggart Mitt Romney, American management consultant, businessman, venture capitalist, and political advisor, eldest son of U.S. Senator Mitt Romney. Does our media tell us about this company and who works or worked for them? Of course they don't. The story has dropped. One interview. Now, does anybody know where Fort Pillow, well, it's in Tennessee. I didn't. I wasn't even aware of this battle. It's a battle at Fort Pillow, Tennessee. The Battle of Fort Pillow occurred as part of the Confederate General Nathan Bedford Forrest's spring 1864 raid in the West Tennessee and Kentucky, areas held by Union troops. So it's the end of the, they call the Civil War. Fort Pillow is located at a bend in the Mississippi River, roughly 40 miles north of Memphis, Tennessee. Built in 1861 at the beginning of the war, the fort was originally a Confederate installation named after Brigadier General Gideon J. Pillow. In 1862, the combined might of the Union Army and Navy seized control of most of the Mississippi River in West Tennessee, rendering untenable the Confederate position at Fort Pillow, which was abandoned. Union forces moved into the vacant fort, using it as a supply depot and a recruitment center. I have a picture of this. Well, near the end of the war, in 1864, the South got involved in a battle to take the fort back. Forrest attacked the fort, which was under the control of General Booth. General Booth had under his control a few more white soldiers than black soldiers. He was killed by a Confederate sharpshooter early in the battle. And shortly after this is when the controversy occurs. What controversy could have happened? There were about twice the number of blacks that were killed during the attack than whites. There were 100 of the 295 whites killed and 200 of the 262 colored killed. Forrest, now he's the founder of the KKK, after the war, quickly gained control of the battle and offered the Union the opportunity to surrender. But the North refused, so the attack resumed. I would put the KKK on your list of the media does not tell the truth about. The South won the battle. But here's the controversy. Did they kill the blacks after they surrendered and when they were unarmed, or did they kill the blacks after they threw down their rifles and then picked them back up and started shooting again? You know which version the North media promoted as the battle was a battle cry used in the Civil War for the North, especially as they destroyed the South at the end of the war. Most media ignore the fact that the blacks retrieved their rifles after they put them down and began shooting again. They just say that Forrest's men killed twice the number of blacks as whites and made the Battle of Fort Pillow a rallying cry for the North. Do you believe the media? I looked on the internet, and it's about 20 to 1 where the media says that Fort Pillow was a massacre of the blacks, and they slammed the KKK. Well, the question is, do you believe the media? And here comes the big one, Hispaniola. Where's anybody know where? What is this?
Spain?
Nope.
Mexico?
Island. Mexico? Nope.
An island in the Caribbean?
Yes. What's it now called?
Haiti.
Is it Haiti?
Haiti and the Dominican Republic. And this is where Columbus discovered. He discovered this island. He didn't discover North America. He discovered Hispaniola, is what they called it. Here he is landing at this island. Haiti is part of an island originally called Hispaniola in the Caribbean that was first discovered by Christopher Columbus in 1492. He sailed the ocean blue. There were several wars between the Tainos, probably pronounced wrong, who were the original inhabitants of Hispaniola, and the Spaniards. Well, the Spaniards won the war. Now, this gets very interesting. This is quite a story, and I bet you never heard it in school. I never heard it, and I was actually a history major. I never learned it in high school, never learned it in college. They soon imported African slaves from Portugal. The first ones came from Western Guinea, Africa, to Lisbon, Portugal. More and more African slaves came to the island. What island we talked about? Hispaniola, right? Soon sugar was introduced in 1511. More and more slaves came to the island. Now I got a little footnote here. Do you know that in 1655, Oliver Cromwell, remember my past sermons, who was the Lord Protectorate of the Republic of England, dispatched a fleet commanded by Admiral Sir William Penn to conquer Santo Domingo, Hispaniola, a Spanish defending force of perhaps 400 to 600 men, mostly militia, repulsed a landing force of 9,000 men. Yet, although the English had failed to overrun the island, they nevertheless seized nearby Jamaica. That's how the British got Jamaica Island. The city soon was subjected to a smallpox epidemic, Carico plight, three hurricanes, and an earthquake. The entire island of Hispaniola was long under Spanish rule, until 1697, when the Spanish rulers handed over the western third of the island to France. Now, we need a map. Anybody see where it is?
Hispaniola.
And this is?
Puerto Rico.
So Columbus came down here and found this out. He never did land in the United States. I don't know why we have Columbus Day, but anyway, we do. Now, this was Spanish. The English tried to take it, but they never got this island. They did not capture this island. And the Spaniards finally gave this island to the French. This is known as what country today? This is called Dominican Republic, and this is Haiti. This is Spanish, this is French. Which one do you think was the most prosperous? Haiti or the Dominican Republic? The western part of the island. Well, the west, that'd be Haiti, wouldn't it? It wasn't called Haiti in those days. It was called San Domingo. And it was owned by France. While the eastern part, under Spanish rule, was known as Santo Domingo. Oh, my goodness. San Domingo and Santo Domingo. So close. So San Domingo, Santo Domingo. By the time George Washington was elected president of the United States, 1789, the French part of the island, which is now called Haiti, was the most prosperous region in the western part of the world. What was the most prosperous region in the western part of the world? Well, it's called San Domingo, or now known as Haiti. That was a shock to learn that. How did it get so prosperous? It started out in the 1600s that the farms produced tobacco, cocoa, and indigo. There were many small farms who had a few white indentured servants and are a few slaves. Each farm was prosperous on its own. Kind of reminds you of the South. But in the 1700s, the crops and farms were changed. The new crops were coffee and sugar. And the small farmer became dispossessed, and their land became incorporated into a sprawling plantations that farmed every available acre. Now, sugar requires large acreage, so they had to buy up all the farms, make a big plantation. It requires many laborers, so you got to get some slaves. and large capital outlay. Where do you get that from? The bankers. By the time George Washington took his first oath of office, that was what year? 1789. The number of sugar plantations numbered 800. That's in Haiti. With the number of coffee plantations, 3,000. Their produce supplied not only the mother country, who was France, but half of Europe. The island basically only grew the two money crops. Well, if they only grew the two money crops, they had to import food to feed their slaves and themselves. This caused a problem when France was fighting an enemy. What probably think would happen? What happened when their rival would blockade their food supply? Many would die of starvation, and this, of course, happened, because they're always fighting wars, especially with the English. The population was divided into four castes. Number one at the top were the whites, and there were 36,000 whites. Second, the free coloreds, which included mulattoes and Negroes. That included 26,000 people. The third in the system was mulatto slaves, which numbered 40,000. And at the very bottom, African slaves, which numbered almost 500,000, 450,000. So that's the island of Haiti. Very prosperous. You had sugar and coffee. Big plantations. The first problem, there was the number of white men, which was about 25,000. To the white women, about 11,000, was over 2 to 1. They were living on an island. It was difficult to go anyplace else. They violated God's law on race mixing or miscegenation. It gave rise to a mulatto population. Second problem. The need for a large capital outlay resulted in a class of absentee owners, deeply in debt to the Jewish usury bankers who owned these great plantations but rarely visited them. The owners were living in France and had bought the small farms and now we're running large plantations. Third problem. The Roman Catholic Church violated God's law against interracial marriage. Did they teach you it was wrong in the Catholic Church? They also violated God's law against monopoly, as they had one-third of the land and close to half the floating wealth of both France and the colony that was based on the island. How did they get this wealth? They gained the wealth through many generations in payment for prayers for the unfortunate, quote-unquote, faithful who might otherwise spend eternity in purgatory. I saw that at a Catholic funeral. Put money in the box for prayers for to get this person out of purgatory. They're still doing it. In short, the church allowed the mulatto problem to develop. So what happened next? Did you ever hear of the French Revolution? Right after our revolution. Around the year 1800, the San Domingo, which is now Haiti, production of sugar and coffee halted. What do you think that would cause? Well, this stopped the income needed by the owners of the wealthy plantations in San Domingo. That is, the French king, his nobles, and the Roman Catholic Church. They needed the money to pay their debts. But when the production stopped, the money no longer came in. So the debts went into default. The French Revolution foreclosed on these properties and banished the owners. The quote-unquote puppet, Napoleon was defeated and the land seized from him. The great prize. What was the great prize of the French Revolution? Two-thirds of France was now firmly in the hands of the international Jewish usury bankers, which was protected by the Allied armies of the world, who also were in debt to the Jewish international bankers. The French Revolution was a successful blank operation. What word is missing? It's business. The French Revolution was a successful business operation. I have a question. How did the usury banking establishment gain control over the people of France to control their minds to the point that they had sympathy with the blacks and the mulattoes? Answer. They bought and controlled the media. They are still doing the same thing that worked in the past. They control the media. Once the usury bankers had bought the media, they supplied the material for them to print. And now they supply material for them to say on the TV. Now they present material for them to say on the radio. They ignored what had actually happened and printed any slander, any vilification required. Well, the people read and believed them. They believed the newspapers, magazines, and other forms of the media. They didn't believe what the Bible had told them, if they read it at all. The media only told the French what it wanted them to know, not the truth. And isn't that what our big complaint is about the media? The newspapers of that day were established and financed by the usury bankers. Instead of printing the king's announcements, they printed exclusively news and views that the bankers wanted. They wanted strife and revolution. Does that ring a bell today? And revolution is what they got. They preyed on the natural pity of the French people for the underdog and painted a picture of continuous misery of the black slave and the vindictive, brutal, evil nature of slave owners in a way to make the aristocrats and clergy monsters in the people's minds. Are we talking about Haiti? Are we talking about the South? It was the same thing. Since the king and the Roman Catholic Church owned two-thirds of the land which had formerly belonged to the people, and since slavery was an exclusive institution of these two groups, it was natural that the international Jewish financiers would successfully use the slavery issue against the church and the government, and 60 years later, use it against the South. Follow the money. It was all there beneath the surface, hidden in plain view. If the people could remove the king and clergy, the land would be ownerless, and the Jewish bankers could foreclose. The media blitz was successful beyond belief. The establishment repeats what has succeeded in the past. For example, in England, the king's land could not be disposed as long as the king lived. So they got the king to flee for his life, which was given as an excuse to execute him. Anybody know what the king's name was? King Charles the First. The Puritan Oliver Cromwell was chosen for this job. The same thing was done in France. The French king was frightened into fleeing. He was caught and executed. They repeat the same thing. What happened in Russia? They shot him. Any government that holds land or wealth is fair game. Did the Tsar in Russia own land? Oh, yes, he did. Once the king was dead, the establishment media was the only voice that was heard in France. It was a monopoly. It could not be answered, and no one knew how to quiet it. Its hammering of the same radical viewpoint led people to believe that everyone had the same view. Every event that took place in the colonies was twisted to disinform and mislead. Is that happening now today? Every blow, every whipping, every execution was stripped out of context, placed under a magnifying glass, and made to appear as a further example of colonial inhumanity. The population of France underwent non-stop stories said to be the daily fare of the slaves. Anytime a cop shoots a black, big story. We got another big story in Georgia. The French public, based on what they were told, were clearly justified in their sympathy with the blacks and the mulattoes. But what they had been told were lies. But what they had been told were falsehoods. But what they had been told was not the truth. The establishment press mounted the ladder of success by painting a picture of San Domingo, or Haiti, that did not exist. The establishment press was paid to create revolution, and it was successful. The prize was San Domingo. The campaign was choreographed by the media. Carefully chosen radical French leaders. You think Pelosi was chose? You think Schumer was chose? Carefully chosen radical French leaders were made prominent by media exposure and rose to power. Who picks the senators and the presidents and vice of the United States? The media. San Domingo was no problem until the media made it a problem. And media-selected politicians provided a solution. Was the coronavirus a problem until the media made it a problem? Who gives the solution? The San Domingo Revolt was a media event. The establishment media got possession of the plantations, but it resulted in what? What happened in Haiti? It resulted in the elimination of all the white people who lived in Haiti. Let me repeat this. All the white people who lived in Haiti were killed. There were no white people who were left. And we were never taught this in public schools. And now, 200 years later, the most prosperous country of all the island colonies has become the poorest country in the Caribbean, if not the whole entire world. The other country on the rest of the island, the Dominican Republic, has an economy that is 600 times more prosperous than Haiti. There were black insurrections, war with England, disease epidemics, but the final outcome was the white population was completely and totally eliminated in Haiti. The regicide, the guillotine, the empire, the battles, the mountains of bodies, the massacres were incidental. There were only the footsteps of racial strangers to God's law who hid behind the media, money, politicians, and armies. They passed unrecognized. They didn't suffer a sleepless night, and they now own the land, and that is what they always do. The same thing is happening right before our eyes. I constantly hear people say the media is a leftist media, and they are correct. Mafia Joe Biden's woman problem. For example, the media said that, quote, all women should be believed, unquote, when Brett Kavanaugh was being nominated for the Supreme Court. A whole host of Democrats made their speeches that was carried by every newspaper, television station, and radio, as well as internet. Quote, I believe all the women accusers of Kavanaugh, unquote. But now, when the shoe was on the other foot, the Democratic nominee for president, Joe Biden, is accused of doing even a worse thing than Kavanaugh was accused of doing. The Democrats, including all the women who believe the women who testified against Kavanaugh, all believe in good old Joe and endorse him. The media totally ignores any accusation against him and all his mafia dealings with the countries that he was put in charge of. He is as rotten as any politician we have ever had. He has dementia and is partially senile. And the media is silent. They keep on writing articles and having quote-unquote experts who attack President Trump. The media, newspaper, magazines, television, cable, internet, billboards, speakers, etc. are controlled. They're controlled in the United States. Who controls them? Could it possibly be the same people who controlled the media in France 200 years ago? I believe that it is. Next topic. Why was John McCain a hero? Do you remember the late John McCain? Some people believe that he was a traitor who was responsible for many deaths as he showboated on a plane that caused an explosion and killed many sailors. Do you remember that he was captured as a prisoner of war and regarded as a traitor by many of his fellow soldiers? Do you remember how he voted when he was in the Senate? But the media loved him. When he died, most politicians, news anchors, and senators praised him over and over. Trump didn't. Anyone who disagreed with him were vilified. Is Trump vilified? I bet you have never heard the story of how he rose in power. Who backed him? The media kept this part of the story a secret. Do you know who John McCain married? He married Cindy Hensley. His wife was the daughter of Jen Hensley. Well, who was Jim Hensley? You probably don't know. I didn't know who he was. The media is silent about the origins of the Hensley fortune that financed McCain's rise to power. The Hensley fortune is no more than a regional offshoot to the vast bootlegging and rackets empire of the Bronfman dynasty, who in turn were major players in the crime syndicate ruled by Mayor Lansky and his partners. Now I begin to understand. I recognize some of those latter names. The media keeps silent about Bronfman, Lansky, Capone, Al Capone, Lucino, Bugsy Siegel, Tarento, Castello, Carrasco, Hensley, Marley, all part of the Jewish mafia organization run by the Bronfmans. The Bronfman start was Seagram's Liquor Company in Canada and later included DuPont Chemical Company, Campbell's Soup, Slitz Blowing, Colgate Palmolive, Kellogg, Nabisco, Norton Salmon, Quaker Oats, Paramount Pictures, Warrington Products, various real estate companies, and on and on. Hensley worked for Marley, who basically oversaw Bronfman's alcohol business in Arizona. In 1948, I was 6 years old, Hensley was prosecuted by federal prosecutors for falsifying liquor violations. Hensley got a 6-month suspended sentence. And in 1953, Hensley was prosecuted by federal prosecutors for falsifying liquor records. But it's common knowledge that young attorney William Rehnquist acted as the mouthpiece, and he got him off scot-free. Rehnquist later became Chief Justice of the Supreme Court and presided over the fix that made George W. Bush president in a rightly disputed election. Any hanky-panky going on there? Hensley was rewarded by Marley by being given the Anheuser-Busch beer distributorships in Arizona, which is one of the largest beer distributors in the nation. The media implied that Hensley's company was a mom-and-pop operation that became a big success. But the real story goes to the history of organized crime at the highest levels. The media keeps the knowledge of organized crime hidden. While John McCain himself cannot be held personally responsible for the sins of his late father-in-law, whose fortune was passed on to his daughter, Cindy McCain, John's wife, the fact is the reformer John McCain owed his political and financial fortunes to the good graces of the biggest names in organized crime. Are you surprised that the Las Vegas gambling industry was one of McCain's primary financial benefactors? And do you think it is strange that McCain was one of Israel's leading United States supporters? McCain was Brofman's personal senator. The media would protect that information and never would let anyone know. I didn't hear anybody talk about that during his funeral speeches. No wonder he was depicted as a hero by the media, ignoring the small, very small outcry of his traitorous behavior. Now I'll conclude with the Jews and Gentiles. Finally, what do you think of the word Jews and Gentiles? They are not even words that are in the original English translation of the Bible. But now they are translated in many, many verses. Most Judeo-Christians believe what the media wants them to believe. Jew means the descendants of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, while Gentile means everyone else. At first, it may make sense. When I was an American Baptist, that is what I was taught. But I didn't read the Bible very much. It was too confusing for me. I knew that the Bible told us about Abram, who God made an everlasting covenant with, both with him and his descendants, Isaac and Jacob. They knew they eventually wound up in Egypt, where they became slaves. Moses was chosen to lead them out. There were all kinds of miracles that occurred as they crossed the Red Sea and eventually made their way to the Promised Land. God was their king, and he said that they were his people. The American Baptists, along with the Catholics and most of the Protestants, say that that was the Jews. That was the people that Jesus was born into. In short, they say that Jesus was a Jew. He used to be the king of this people. But wait a minute. Was Jesus really a Jew? If he was, he would be related to Brofman, Hensley, and Al Capone. What do the Jews say? They lie. They say publicly that they are descended from Judah, Levi, and Benjamin. That makes them and Jesus being descended from the same kingdom, most from the same tribe, if it were true. But it would still not be all of Israel, for there was another kingdom of Israelites. The Roman Catholic Church was the first to use the word Jews and Gentiles. They say that they meant that salvation was universal. But their error was carried on by Martin Luther, John Calvin, and the Wesley brothers, together with cult leaders such as William Miller, Joseph Smith, and many, 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 many others. The common teaching is the Jews are Israel, and the Gentiles are everyone else. And since this traditional teaching is so ingrained in commentaries, concordances, Bible dictionaries, books, and in people's minds, it is hard for anyone brought up with this belief to shake it off. The modern day media teaches that this is the correct translation. The media says the words translated as Gentile in the King James Version of the Bible are: the Hebrew is goyim, the Greek is ethnos and ethne. 374 times they translate these words as nations. 64 times they translate the two Greek words as nations. 143 times they translate those three words as heathen. 5 times they treat the Greek words as heathen. 30 times they translate those three words as Gentiles. 93 times they translate those two Greek words as Gentiles. 11 times they treat the three Hebrew words as people. 2 times they treat the Greek words as people. What kind of translation is this? Let's look at a few of the many scriptures where these words are used. Look at 4 scriptures. Genesis chapter 12, verses 1 and 2. Now the Lord has said unto Abram, get thee out of thy country and from thy kindred and from thy father's house unto a land I will show thee, and I will make of thee a great Gentile nation, and I will bless thee and make thy name great, and thou shalt be a blessing. Think about these two verses for a second. If the media is correct, God made a great non-Israel Gentile nation out of Abram. What about Genesis 25:23? And the Lord said to her, Rebekah, two Gentiles are in your womb, and two manner of people shall be separated from thy bowels, and the one people shall be stronger than the other people, and the elder shall serve the younger. Rebekah had two Gentiles, meaning two non-Israel nations in her womb. These two sons were named Esau and Jacob, and they both became non-Israel nations. How about Jeremiah 31:36? If these ordinances, referring to the sun and the moon, depart from me, saith the Lord, then the seed of Israel also shall cease from being a Gentile nation before me forever. Would Israel cease from being a non-Israel nation? Would Israel cease from being a Gentile nation? Would Israel cease from being a heathen nation? Let's go to the New Testament, Acts 10:22. And they said, Cornelius, the centurion, a just man, and one that feareth God and of good report among all the Gentiles of the Jews, was born from God by a holy angel to send for thee into his house and to hear the words of thee. Cornelius was the first Gentile, many Judeo-Christians say, who was saved. But who are the Gentiles of the Jews? Gentiles of the Jews? It doesn't make any sense. What does make sense? When you read the Bible, you discover that the nation of Israel was divided into several parts during their history. The northern part of the nation became one of two nations who became entirely separate nations. They eventually became divorced. They were scattered. They became not the people of God. This is a marvelous revelation the majority of Judeo-Christians have never heard. They had been divorced for almost 700 years. I never heard this in the American Baptist Church. Less than 50,000 of the kingdom of Judah had returned to Jerusalem, and many of them had racially intermarried. But they had been joined by many of their enemies in their lands. Edomites, Babylonians, Syrians, etc. were all there. But the land was divided into three regions. Which region did Jesus feel the most comfortable? I was never asked that in the American Baptist Church. Which region did Jesus pick the majority of his disciples? In what region did Jesus do most of his preaching? The three regions were Galilee, Samaria, and Judea. Let's look at John chapter 7, verse 1. After these things, Jesus walked in Galilee. For he would not walk in Jewry because the Jews sought to kill him. Galilee was where Jesus lived most of his life. The tribe of Benjamin were the inhabitants that mainly lived there. Babylonians and other non-Israelites were the major dwellers in Samaria. The tribe of Judah and the Edomites, known as Jews, were the conflicting nations that lived there. Many Christians seem to think that Jesus dwelt among the Jews in Jerusalem, but this is not true. Most Christians seem to think that Jerusalem was the center point of Jesus' teaching ministry, but that's not true. Jesus only went to Jerusalem at particular times for particular purposes. But it was Galilee that Jesus lived and performed most of his ministry. And these people in places like Matthew 4, 15, and 16 are called what? The Israelites who were living in Galilee referred to as being Gentiles in many translations. My conclusion. You believe the media? Do you believe that Anthony Fauci didn't give $3.7 million to the Wuhan lab? Do you believe that Obama's daughter is not a close friend to Joe Biden's granddaughter? Do you believe that there is any company like McKinsey and Company prepares American industry to leave the country and build manufacturing in other countries? Do you believe the Fort Pillow was a massacre by forced men who slaughtered unarmed Negroes? Do you believe that Haiti didn't kill all the white people in the country? Do you believe that Joe Biden is innocent when his son, brother, sister, friends made multi-millions from nations in which he oversaw, and the Me Too movement is not to be believed when the charges are against him? Do you believe that John McCain was an American hero? Do you believe the Jews are the people who are living in the country by the same name in the Middle East and all over the world, and the Gentiles are everybody else? Do you believe what the media is teaching? The media is a far, far, far left pro-democratic media which supports the communist viewpoints. Or do you believe what the Word of God teaches? Which one do you believe? Blessed be the Lord God of Israel.